Welcome to Saints History, told and experienced the way God intended it, with excessive amounts of alcohol and cursing. The booze is probably bourbon because...
Other alcohols are for rich women on diets.
Now, here's your drunk Saints History host, who is...
bombed out of his gourd.
All right, so you paid for it, so you get it. It's another episode of Saints Drunk History. This episode, we have another special guest, an old friend of mine from way back when, Scott Prather of 1420 ESPN Radio in Lafayette. Go on the internet, and you can find his show. He's phenomenal. In your afternoons, when you don't want to do work, me and Scott know each other because we used to work back for Intercom in the days, the halcyon days of WWL Radio. Scott, thanks for giving us time tonight as we discuss the 2010 New Orleans Saints.
And as you drink, Ralph,
I mean,
you're probably the only person that remembers this. But depending on how much you've drank, you might not. What was the first show that I was ever on and you were on it on occasion? I would have to call you as the producer of this show at like 6 in the morning, and you'd wake up, you'd be like, who's this?
Oh,
you
God,
know, why are you calling?
I can't remember.
And I was like, his
first name is Terry. He was on 13.
That's right.
His 1350, and he went to work for Ray Nagin when Ray Nagin got elected mayor.
Yeah, but he was the mayor's spokesman. That was Terry Davis.
Terry Davis.
It was New Orleans Living, and I was just happy to be on the air. You know, I was like fresh out of college, and then the guy quit that was doing it before, so I was producing the show when I do these sports updates, and then 3 months later, his show got canceled, and they took it off the air. But for 3 months, I would occasionally call Ralph
yes.
and wake him up, and he'd be like, wait, what did I agree to do?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, that's right. I got to talk
then,
sports.
And then, like, I remember, like, you were sick one time or something, or I had to produce it, and they're like, you're doing the sports update? I'm like, doing the sports update on the air? Like, for real? I'm like, do you want me to do that? And I did it. It was terrible. It was like this without the cursing. So, I admit, like, I unabashedly love the 2010 Saints. And I know we'll get to the ending and the Beastquake and all that horribleness, but I love the 2010 Saints because the 2010 Saints, Scott, is just like 2009 was magic, right? And this, like, the 2009 Saints delivered all our dreams and everything we could ever fucking want, right? So, like, I don't even think they had an offseason in 2009. I think it was like a 2-week break. All we did was watch highlights and America's Game. Until the season started.
Pretty much, yeah.
Until the season started and we were off and running. But it was magical because, like, there was nothing in 2010 that could, like, ruin 2009. Like, they could have gone, like, 5-11. You'd be like, I don't give a fuck. They won the Super Bowl. It's all good. I got the T-shirt. I got them. I spent, like, $400. I'm drinking scotch. I mean, bourbon. I'm drinking Elijah Craig bourbon out of Saints World Championship tumblers.
Hell yeah. I'm drinking a Sapporo beer right now that's in a cooler, like a koozie, a bottle koozie, and it's a Saints one from 2009 Super Bowl champs. I figured I would do it for this occasion. And you're right, man, that 2010, the anticipation of the kickoff, you know, the Thursday night opener, it was awesome, but it was more of like that Super Bowl glow, like you were saying. You were still just like, oh yeah, Saints are hosting the kickoff for the whole season because Super Bowl champs. Like, the game was, as much as we had watched on replay and NFL films, the win over the Vikings in the NFC Championship game and Favre's coming back, you know, that game, the buildup of breaking it down, it wasn't your typical let's break down a Saints opener. It was let's just freaking party, party and blow it out.
I want to see the banner fucking drop, baby. That's what I'm here to see, you know? Like,
hell yeah.
That's what
until you were telling me about it, I don't know that I ever appreciated 2010 as much as I could.
Oh,
because
I love 2010.
I mean, the Super Bowl glow is still, Ralph, you know this, it's still there for some
dude,
people. It takes three straight 7-9 seasons, and it's like, shit, how, you know, this is below mediocrity. If you were, yeah, but I mean, the Super Bowl, it's like, yeah, that was a long time ago.
2009, I wasn't even married, and I didn't even own a house. That's how long ago it was. So, like,
yeah.
Here's the thing.
Neither was I, and we didn't have kids either, yeah. So things have changed.
I had somebody on Twitter, they were like, you know how long 2009 was ago? My kid was just born, now he's doing fucking long division. That's how long ago 2009 is. Like, it's a good point, man. So, so it was just phenomenal. It was just like this glow. And here's the thing, like, you go into the year and the opening game, like, they dropped the banner, and the Saints, you know, in 2009, their offense just kicked ass. They could run the ball. They did whatever they wanted. They created a ton of turnovers. The opening game, they beat Minnesota, like, 14-9. And it was, like, it wasn't, like, cold water, but it was, like, a realization that, like, in no sport, maybe basketball, but in baseball and football and college football, you don't pick up where you left off the year before. Like, it's just completely fucking different. And that's what it was with the Saints. Like, they scored 14 points. They couldn't really run the ball. But their defense was really good. And they held Minnesota to 253 yards. They got a bunch of turnovers. But it was like, it was kind of like a thing where, like, 2009, like, it's still 2010, it's going to be fun. You're going to love it. But, like, the actual team and how they play is going to be completely different.
There wasn't any points in the fourth quarter of that game. So the Saints, you know, opening drive down the field, Devery Henderson, 29-yard touchdown from Drew Brees, and that Super Bowl glow.
You're
is
like, fuck, we're winning the next five Super Bowls, baby.
We're never gonna lose again. No. And then the game slowed down, and at that point, no one knew that Brett Favre was going to actually play like a 41-year-old. You know, everyone was still hung up on his season before. And then,
dude, he was
as that
cooked.
Season went on,
he
realized that the Vikings weren't that good. And no. Yeah, that game wasn't really like aesthetically. It's not a game you'd go back and be like, man, I want to go watch the highlights of that. It really was an ugly game.
It was
terrible. Hell, the Saints were Super Bowl champs and they won. So we just kind of took it and said, hey, it was a beautiful day.
So, you know, and when they win, and they had the draft that year, and, you know, they picked Patrick Robertson, right, in corner.
That's right.
And Jimmy Graham, who was a tight end, but he wasn't really playing yet. But we'll get into him. He features kind of weirdly big in this season, if people don't remember. So they go to San Francisco, and it's a Monday night game, so it's fun, and it's a road game. And this might actually be one of the last road Monday night games that the Saints have won, I think. They beat San Francisco 25-22. Garrett Hartley kind of struggles, but the Saints are like, they're kind of cruising in this game. It's like 16-7, and it's fine. And then it's like 20. Then it's like 22 because it's like 22-14. You're like, they're cruising, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh fuck, this game is, how did this game get tied? And that started the theme of 2010, where like the Saints would like pull these close games out of their ass.
Yeah, that is maybe my favorite win of that whole
season.
Wow, because it's Monday night, it's on the road, but it's the Niners and all the history.
Yeah,
right. For any longtime Saints fans, I remember after that game being like, that's what it felt like for the Niners all those years. Back in the, you know, the dome, late 80s, early 90s, the
Niners
had these great teams,
yeah.
And they could outplay the Niners from, like, almost start to finish, and they would pull games out of their ass, and they would always find a way, and the Saints would make a little mistake here, a little mistake there, and it would get under my skin, and I just freaking hated them. Yeah. And here are the Saints. Now they're the defending champs. They're at Candlestick, not a place they were historically very good.
A dump.
And it's the Niners making the mistakes. It's the Saints just taking the last drive down the field and Hartley kicking this just fish of, I mean, it was such
yeah.
a, he was so lucky it didn't get blocked. It was this ugly kick that kind of, it almost looked like a knuckleball, but it went through the uprights. And the Saints got out of there, you know, by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah,
suddenly they're 2-0, and it's like that felt like the way the Niners used to beat the Saints back in the day when they were looked at as a top dog, and they just find a way. And it would drive Saints fans nuts because you'd be like, shit, we were better, but nobody remembered that.
Yeah.
They just remembered, hey, look, you lost to the Niners.
Here, this drive when it's tied 22 apiece with a minute 19, I'm going to read the play-by-play. It's like straight – it's like it encapsulates like the golden era of Saints football. You know, first play, Pierre Thomas for 8 yards. Pierre Thomas for 14 yards. Timeout. Drew Brees to Colston, incomplete. Drew Brees deep to Colston for 30. Spikes ball. Hits Jeremy Shockey for for 4 yards. Timeout number 3, false start Charles Brown because he was terrible even then. And Garrett Hartley kicks the 37-yard field goal. Everybody in San Francisco drives home pissed off. You know, but it's like the golden age. Pierre Thomas, it's like the golden age, man.
Tell me that doesn't sound exactly like a play-by-play of a game the Niners would have pulled off against the Saints in the late 80s, early 90s. Like when the Saints were good. I mean, there were times.
It would have been like Steve Young to Ricky Waters, Steve Young to Ricky Waters, Steve Young to Rice, Steve Young to Taylor. Mike Kofor kicks field goal. Saints get their heart ripped out.
Boom. That's it. I mean, it was, and so it felt so good.
And
they're 2-0. You feel like it's one of those. I like to call them the medicine season, right? A team that's not used to that level of success wins it all. They typically have a medicine season. My friend Kevin Foote says that, and so you're almost expecting them to take this step back, and in some ways they did, but Ralph, maybe not as much as people remember, because they won so many games like that one in 2010. That win over the Niners, it really was like a paradigm for so many of the wild wins they would get that year. It's maybe my favorite win. Well, no, look, they went and won at the Georgia Dome. I mean, anytime you beat the Falcons on national TV.
I don't know. I love – there are so many good wins in 2010 we're going to get to, because we're going through it game by game because – we're drunk. I'm drunk.
Then they go to play Atlanta,
and it's a Sunday afternoon game. And this game kind of like swung the whole year, and it started to like, not that like you thought it was a crisis, but looking back at it, you were like, oh yeah, Hartley wasn't that consistent. And they played Atlanta, and that game was just great. Like Atlanta was fired up. Atlanta was like, we have to beat the fucking Saints and retake the division, blah blah blah. So that game was just. As far as, like, you talked about not wanting to watch a football game, the Viking game, you want to watch this Saints-Atlanta game, except that the Saints lose in heartbreaking fashion. But that just for a phenomenal game, I mean, Lance Moore had an 80-yard touchdown.
He had a huge punt return, too, in that game, where I think he brought it down deep into their territory.
Yep. And he caught a 16-yard touchdown. So Garrett Hartley kicks the 32-yarder with, like, 4 seconds left to tie the game, but then in overtime he shanks like a makeable one.
29 yards. I was right there sitting in the freaking end zone, and this jabroni comes out and just shanks it. And there's that great shot where, you know, Tom Benson, God bless him, he's sitting up there with Gale, and he stands up and he starts cheering
was,
like, oh, that we
was
did
two,
it.
I think that was
somebody
two,
tells him.
No,
no,
he missed it. I think that was
it.
2009 versus Tampa, but the same thing. The weird thing with Hartley is, like, if that kick would have been from 49, like, it would have been money. Like, Hartley from, like, 45 out was money. And it didn't matter. Like, in the Super Bowl, you can make an argument Hartley's MVP. And people laugh at me, but he kicked 3 40-plus yard field goals, and all of them felt like they were
nailed
gigantic,
him.
You know?
Yeah, he was great in so he didn't, like, 2009, Ralph, he didn't play until the win over Washington.
Yeah.
He was suspended for 4 games, and then Peyton, you know, I mean, part of him felt bad
Carney
by cutting
Carney,
and another part of him just, he didn't trust him yet, so he had to keep Carney there and keep him kicking.
Yeah.
But in 2010, man, Hartley, this was kind of the beginning of the up and down wreck that he would be. And as you said, I mean, first of all, I don't care what season it is with the Rex. You lose to Atlanta in overtime with Matt Bryant field goal.
46 yards.
You feel like shit. It's the worst.
Yeah.
But having Hartley just shank a 29-yarder when you could have gone up 3-0, and in the end, the way the whole season shakes out, he makes that field goal. Granted, you know, look, if he makes it and they win, maybe their mindset's different and they lose a game they would have won, or vice versa. But just looking at how it would have affected the standings the rest of the year, the Saints aren't on the road playing a 7-9 team. They're at home with a bye, and they're the one seed in the NFC if he just makes that kick, but he doesn't.
And then Hartley, I want to say he got injured and was out for the year, right? Like something happened to him. Because the next week they play Carolina, and Carney comes in and saves them. Or maybe they just, you know, I want to say.
Well, I know. So he missed. I remember he missed all of 2011. That's when they had in John Casey. But Garrett, one time he missed 4 games because he was suspended because he took Adderall for what he said. He was driving.
No,
Garrett, from That was 09.
No, Garrett Hartley, he played in 14 games, but Carney played in 2 games. I don't like, maybe I'm really drunk, but I can't remember, but Carney like played like 2 games in that year for randomly, and Carney like saved them the next week in Carolina. As Carolina was fucking,
I think, honestly, Ralph, I think they just signed Carney in response to that. Yeah. And then they made him an inactive for the next 2 games because Peyton
But Carney made the kick. The next week, Carney made the 2 kicks to beat Carolina, who was fucking dreadful. Was fucking dreadful. What's that?
I think he kept 2 kickers until a bunch of injuries kept mounting up at other positions, and then he decided to cut Hartley. Because, and then he later signed a contract extension that made him the highest paid kicker in the game at the time, which is freaking nuts. And then he missed all of next season. I mean, that Garrett Hart, you could, if Garrett Hartley writes a book, I'm reading it.
Yeah. Garrett, every time the Saints need a kicker, we're like, call Garrett Hartley out the duck line. So
he's on YouTube hunting gators.
So they beat Carolina 16-14 and, they're 3-1, and you're like, cool, it's fine. We're going 12-4, 13. Then they go to Arizona and just get curb stomped by like an Arizona team that, like when I tell you
Max Hall, that's the quarterback,
Max Hall, who I don't think like just that's unbelievable. But like this is where like the craziness started with the Saints, because like Liddell Betts was getting 10 carries in that game, which is insane. And Chris Ivory, and the running back injuries started to mount. You know, like Reggie was hurt, and Pierre was hurt, and that's when the running back injuries started to mount. So the Saints go 3-2, but then they go to Tampa, and they pistol whip Tampa, because Tampa's, you know, the Saints always seem to do really well in Tampa, right? You know,
it was probably their most dominant. I know they had a win against St. Louis in the Dome later that year against rookie Sam Bradford, but I think that win against Tampa was their most dominant performance of the season. Like, it was 31-6. It could have been 50-0.
Chris Ivory, 15 rushes for 158. Chris Ivory was so fun, dude. He just trucked. When Chris Ivory got going, he was so fun. Like, he would just...
The most violent runner in Saints history. Can we give him that label?
Yeah, he was violent. Like when you saw him, you're like, yeah, he's not going to be lasting more than, like, 3 years. Because that dude just... Like, some people look for contact, and if they have to do it, they do it. Some people get out of bounds to preserve themselves. And some people are like, oh, I'm going to truck this dude. And Chris Ivory was that guy. Like, Chris Ivory, he trucked people, and he liked to truck people, and it was... incredibly enjoyable. And you're like, so you're like, they're 4-2. This is great. And then they played Cleveland.
Damn game. So, Ralph.
Scott Chan, I was at that game.
I was as well. And what was it? It was David Bowens, you know, this old D tackle who had been a Pro Bowler with the Dolphins in a previous life, it felt
Tim
like.
Bowens. Tim
and
Bowens,
the dude gets two. The dude gets 2 pick sixes against Drew Brees in that game, didn't he? I mean,
David Bowens, 30-yard interception Bowens, return. Yeah. David Bowens, 64-yard interception return. How the fuck does that happen?
He's like a 300-pound guy in his 30s. It was such a bad game. And part of me, that 09 season was the first year I was married. And so my wife was going to these games, and she's like, this is fun, you know? And I'm like, well, yeah, this is, you have no idea all the things that happened before this. And so in 2010, we get, you know, a few extra tickets to the game. So my in-laws bring her sister and her husband, who's a good friend of mine, and they really haven't been to a Saints game before. And so remembering the way the Dome was rocking so much, you know, in 09 and, you know, in 2011 and most of 2010, they go to this game and the Dome is like, you just got that feeling when you walked in that day, you were like, This something's wrong. Yeah. Like something bad is about to happen.
This is horrible. Colt McCoy, 9 of 16 for 74 yards, and they
winning quarterback.
Drew Brees was terrible that game. He threw 4 picks. He threw for 356. Threw the ball 56 times. So then you're like, oh man. But then they come back on a Monday on a Sunday night game. It's Halloween.
Halloween against
Pittsburgh. They beat up the Steelers. It's 20-10. You're like, it's fine. And the thing was, that defense was good. The offense, as far as a Sean Payton offense, was one of the worst ones. They were like 11th in points scored. That defense was good. Now, I know they played a lot of crappy quarterbacks, but they were fourth in freaking defense, and they beat people up. They sacked Roethlisberger 3 times. They got an interception. Like, that defense was, it was like the last, it was like the last gasp of good Vilma before his knees gave out, and they had a lot of good personnel. I mean, that defense had a lot of good personnel, and it was good. I wouldn't say the defense carried them, but as far as like being consistent, because the 2009 defense, it wasn't good. It just
forced a hell of a lot of turnovers.
It just got a lot of turnovers, but that doesn't make them good. That defense had a bunch of guys. They had like set, and here's the weird thing about that team is, Cedric Ellis might have been the best defender on that team. Like, he was 25, and he had 6 sacks, and he was like a draft pick where you're like, they drafted him in 08, you're like, he's coming, he was really good last year. 2010, he was really good, and you're like, Cedric Ellis is going to be the cornerstone of this defense. Like, he is going to be a Pro Bowl defensive tackle. And after 2010, he fell off a fucking cliff, Scott, which is
he didn't care.
It was weird though. Like,
he had no work ethic whatsoever, like zilch. When I tell you the amount of reporters and people that knew Cedric Ellis said, yeah, this guy has so much God-given talent. And like, his look, he came from a good family. His parents, like, it wasn't like his situation was, he did not want to put in the work. He liked to party hard.
Yeah.
He liked to eat the New Orleans cuisine, and he didn't like to work hard in practice. And so, you know, whenever you've got that God-given talent, you're in your mid-20s and it's working, and suddenly, you know, it starts going away. If he had the work ethic, he could maybe still be playing today, but at the very least, he would have gotten a much bigger second contract.
He got no
second
contract.
He would have been a guy that Saints fans. No, yeah, I mean, I think he signed with the Bears and he ended up not even, you know, showing up.
Yeah.
And if he puts a little bit of effort in, Saints fans remember him totally different. Like, nobody remembers the 2010 Cedric Ellis. They remember the guy that just fizzled out and never lived up to the hype, because he didn't.
He could have been so good. In 2010, he was phenomenal. Like, in 2010, he was what Nick Fairley was last year, but he was 25. And you were like, that dude, he's the guy. We finally hit a home run on a defensive draft pick. I remember that specifically. I think I even wrote a fucking column on it in WWL. But he ended up petering out. But they beat Pittsburgh 5-3. Then they just, like you said, they housed Carolina, because Carolina that year was just awful. Like, Carolina was just awful that year. And then, like you say,
that was their win streak, right? The Pittsburgh began the 6-game win streak. Yeah. You had Carolina, you dominate them. But I mean, look, Carolina started Jimmy Clausen in that game. Hey man, it wasn't a great
when the
one.
Saints hold the team without a touchdown in the Sean Payton era, we celebrated. They're 1-7 and on their way to getting Cam Newton. But Jimmy Clausen, 8 of 18. They brought in Tony Pike, who I don't even remember who the fuck that was.
Who?
They played three. They played three quarterbacks. They played Clausen, Pike, and Matt Moore. I remember Matt Moore because he started a playoff game for the Dolphins. That's my wife's team in the playoffs this past year. So I don't know who Matt Moore was, but like Tony Pike, I have like some of these people. You're like, oh yeah, I remember him. Tony Pike, I have no fucking clue who that was. But the Saints just like, you know, I mean. Carolina, they didn't even have 100 yards passing. I mean, that's incredible. They had 68 net total yards passing. The Saints sacked them 4 times. They had 195 total yards. Like, that's crazy. And, you know, at the time, I remember thinking, it's like, man, the Saints, you're like, the Saints offense is going to fall in place. Maybe they'll get some running backs back. We're going to win it again. And then they had the bye week, and then they play Seattle, and they beat Seattle 34-19, and the NFC West was terrible. So you're like, whatever.
You weren't thinking in your mind, we're going to face them again.
No.
It's not going to go well.
And then you're thinking, then they, to me, it was my two probably my two favorite wins of the year. They played Dallas on Thanksgiving, and the Saints.
That was beautiful.
They never play. I can't remember in my lifetime the Saints ever playing on Thanksgiving. So I was pumped. I think that's the only.
Yeah, I mean, I can't either. I think that's the only one. Honestly, that's the only time they've ever played on Thanksgiving.
So I was like, this is awesome. We're playing on Thanksgiving. We're gonna beat that. This is phenomenal. And that game was bananas, you know. It was back and forth. Like, the Cowboys had fired Wade Phillips, and Jason Garrett was the interim coach, you know. And the Saints, it got weird because the Saints, like, got up. It was, you know, Chris Ivory scored.
Oh, 17-0 after the first quarter. I mean, Breeze gets him down in the red zone two times. Ivory gets like two touchdowns from close in. And they're just, and the last time they had played in Dallas prior to that
was 06.
I don't remember the last time. The last time they played in Dallas. And so you just start having these flashbacks of just, oh my God, they just dominate when they play the Cowboys. It's this great feeling. And, you know, halftime rolls around and suddenly, all right, like it's 20-6.
Miles Austin, blast from the past.
By the time you get to the fourth quarter, Ralph, the Cowboys are up. I mean, it's 27-23.
And they have the ball. They have the ball.
Yeah.
And they're running out the clock. You know?
Roy Williams. Malcolm
Jenkins makes the jank palm where he strips them, gets the ball, the Saints get the ball back, and they drive down. And they
go down the field, man.
They go down the field.
Like, what? I mean, it's 1 minute, Ralph. Like 1 minute, five plays.
Yeah, it's like boom, boom,
89 yards, and there's all these Saints fans in Dallas too. It's like you can hear them, and Fox is showing all these shots of these Cowboys fans just so distraught. And like I've never been happier. I've never been more thankful on Thanksgiving in my life.
And I remember it was so fun. And like I'd come in. In 2010, I fly, you know, we go, me and my wife, we go in to New Orleans, and my brother always hosts Thanksgiving with his husband, and my brother's just a phenomenal cook, and he cooks, and it's just, John, it's all family, it's just, I love it, it's fun, and all the relatives are there, and all the old relatives that are like 60 and 70 years old, and the Saints are blowing it, and they're down 27-23, and they got the ball, they're like, oh, it's the same old Saints, they're gonna fucking choke, and I turned to one of them, and I said, what do you mean the same old Saints? We're the world fucking champion, Saints. We are going down in this game, and we are fucking winning because we are the fucking world champions. And everybody laughed at me because I was drunk at the time. But they did it, and I was like, there you go. That's what champions do. That's what champions do. And it was just the best, Scott.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I love every year. On Thanksgiving, you know, I have a few people I know that are Cowboys fans, and I'll always text them the picture. There's this great shot of just Malcolm Jenkins stripping Roy Williams. And, you know, it got to a point where they were like, after year three, they're like, all right, this is kind of old. Or, you know, and then after year four, oh, well, you know, this is old news. The Cowboys are this now. And I don't care because I know it bothers them. And I always send it to them. And it's, I mean, if Roy Williams just goes down, right?
They win
the game.
Yeah.
And he decides he wants to try to score. I mean, talk about it. They give up a first rounder for that dude, and talk about a disappointment. So Cowboys fans already didn't like the guy so to begin good. With because he never lived up to these lofty expectations. And, you know, he was known to be lazy at times and a little overweight. So he's running, and here's Malcolm Jenkins, the second year guy who's played corner and safety.
And I will say this.
Takes the ball from him, and you're thinking, it's another one of those games, Ralph, where you as soon as they stripped him, you knew it was over.
Yeah,
like,
here's
the Saints are winning. The Saints are winning.
Here's the thing I'll say about Malcolm Jenkins. He never was as good with the Saints as he was with Philly, and I'll give him that. Probably the Saints just couldn't get it out of him, whatever. But I will always say this for Malcolm Jenkins. That dude always played hard 100% of the time. Like, I can think of the play in Dallas, a play in Tampa where he chased a dude down and the Saints ended up getting a turnover. Like, that dude always played hard, and he was frustrating because you felt like he should have been better with the Saints. But Saints players that play hard and don't shy from the media, I like them. Like, Jason David, fans hate him. I always liked him because even when he had a shitty
game. He faced the music.
And I'm like,
he was terrible, but he faced the music.
Yeah, and
he didn't put a hoodie on.
No,
he didn't try to hide his face.
No, and I respect it. And I always respected Malcolm. You know, so they beat Dallas, and then they go to Cincinnati, which, if the Dallas game was crazy, the Cincinnati game was just as bonkers. Like, you know, the Saints, again.
I think it's the coldest game. I could be wrong. If it's not, it's like second. You talk about the coldest games the Saints have won.
32 degrees, franchise history. Wind chill, 23 degrees.
Yeah, that's one of them, man. That's one of them. And
yeah, but this,
imagine trying to tackle Chris Ivory in 32 degree weather.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like a replay of the Dallas game. The Saints get up 20-6, and they're favored by 10. They're favored by 7. Cincinnati's, 3-9 or whatever the fuck they were, and you're like, this is another game. The Saints are going to coast, but they don't. Chris Ivory, another game, 15, 117, and 2 touchdowns. Like, Chris Ivory, like, he's not in the Saints Hall of Fame. He can't be in the Saints Hall of Fame. But if there's, like, a fun player Saints Hall of Fame, like, he trucked a dude he trucked a dude on a 55-yard touchdown run to make it 10-3. It's just,
oh, yeah.
It's like, I love Chris.
If Bush and more or less Pierre Thomas, and we can get more into Pierre later because there was also that weird backstory of Sean Payton calling him out through the media and wanting
we'll
him to play. That was really weird. But he ended up coming back and he helped the Saints beat the Falcons. But he probably shouldn't have been back because he was hurt. But because guys were hurt, Ivory, this guy that similar to Kyrie Robinson a few years later, he just gets a tryout and he ends up making the team. And they're just like, look, just. He might not get that. He's not going to get a second contract from us. But if he wants to run like that, hand him the freaking ball and just let him go.
I might need to get a Chris Ivory jersey. Can they have one on the discount rack at the Black and Gold store? Like
I watched a game in Boston at this bar across from Fenway Park in 2011, which this is in 2011 Saints drunk history, I know, but there was people. It was weird. It was oddly enough, it was a Saints bar. That's how I found out about it. So I rode. My friend didn't have a car, so we rode bikes over there, and bunch of Saints people are walking, and you see the Breeze jerseys, typical Shockey jerseys, the usual stuff. I saw this one, this one couple, a boy and a girl, that were in Ivory jerseys, and I walked up to them and I just said, Good call. They had no idea what I was saying, but I had to let them know. That's a good call.
Fun, interesting thing about Pierre Thomas. The Saints in 2010 were this close to trading him to New England. I forget who they were. They were going to trade him for a corner that ended up being a bust and like a fourth-round pick. And here's the thing. When I found out about that after 2010 and the Saints, 2011, they ended up giving Pierre the extension that he refused, and then he got hurt and he ended up signing it. When here's the thing, people are like, should we re-sign Pierre Thomas? Because I'm like, if Bill Belichick wants him, the Saints need to fucking keep him. And that was my whole rationale. I had no facts to back it up at all. If Bill Belichick wants him, we need to keep him.
Pierre Thomas is one of my favorite Saints of all time. And that 2010 season for him, I mean, he was always a classy dude, but he had that injured left ankle. And then all these reports that the Saints were kind of pushing him back. He got a hernia. And you've covered Sean Payton. I mean, he is boys with Jay Glazer. Like, if Jay Glazer's reporting something, it's coming from Sean Payton.
Yeah.
Like, Sean would never come out and publicly say, Pierre needs to do this or that. And you're right. They came so close to trading him just before the trade deadline for, I think, a late draft pick or according to the report, if I remember, the Pats, this typical Belichick, they wanted the Saints to throw in a draft
pick. Yeah, and the Saints are like,
killed it. But, like, you think about how good of a player he was, how just all – I mean, I could praise Pierre all day, so I'm not going to bore anybody. But – Peyton's getting Jay Glazer to come out publicly, and at the time Thomas is in a contract year, and this is an undrafted guy, so he's got He's got so much on the line. And
he's a running back,
so
this is his only payday he's ever going to get.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. And then you got to factor in that they know a lockout's coming. So there's just so much. There's so many clouds over the situation. Yeah. And when Glazer's saying, well, Peyton, you know, through sources I hear, is upset about Pierre Thomas not recovering enough or quickly enough. And then somebody leaks a report from Pierre's camp. Well, his injury's a little more serious because he rushed back and all this other stuff. And I just remember being so upset that they weren't backing this guy. And truth be told, they rushed him back from injury. And if he doesn't come back from injury, they don't win that Monday night game in Atlanta, which we'll get to later. But, and he had a good season in 2011. So I shouldn't say that ultimately it hurt him in the long run. But that backstory of the drama between he and Peyton that never really reached major headlines, but was always just kind of lurking in the shadows. Yeah. I love Pierre Thomas.
Well,
and he handled it with class. He never attacked.
That game,
he ended up signing a really good deal with the Saints the next season. And you know, he's one of the most beloved players of franchise history.
Yeah, but that Cincinnati game, like it was the Dallas game, where they get ahead. Cincinnati pulls ahead.
Yeah,
but they drive down. The Saints drive down and go ahead 34-30. It was just a great drive from Drew Brees. He hits Meacham for 42, who had a big game, a 50-yard touchdown earlier. He hits Marcus Colson for a 3-yard touchdown, but there's still like 30 seconds left, and Cincinnati's driving down, and Roman Harper, who is one of my favorite Saints, and I have been blocked by Cian Fahey, who writes a quarterback pamphlet. It's overpriced, by the way. Don't buy it. It's not worth your $20. He blocked me because he hates Roman Harper and says he's terrible. And I was like, any dude that plays a decade in the NFL and makes $40 million is not terrible. I don't care what the fuck you say, Irish dude. Roman Harper seals the game with a sack. And I just, like, Roman Harper, like, yes, he couldn't cover. But goddamn, when he blitzed, it was awesome, Scott. I don't care.
He was a Pro Bowler that
year. Yeah.
He was a Pro Bowler that year. Legit. I mean, he was. I get it. When you're on an island and you're not good in coverage, it's easy for everybody to see, right? It's easy to say you blew it or you couldn't keep up with that. Not to mention, I think covering a wide receiver in the NFL is probably the hardest thing to do in professional sports aside from trying to like hit a fastball off a major league pitcher. He was so good, you know, five tackles in that game, the big sack. You know, Harper's one of the more underrated players in Saints history. I'm with you there. But what stood out to me most about this game, what I remember most about it, was that on the game-winning drive, when Brees hits Colston and they go up, you know, 34-30, they're down three. There's less than a minute left.
Never a doubt in my fucking mind.
So it's fourth down. They don't have any timeouts left. It's fourth down. They don't have any timeouts left. So Brees comes to the line.
Yeah.
And he starts doing and you know, just yelling loud and kind of moving his head just a tad. The thing that he does, and when Sean Payton blows a timeout, Saints fans just get
nuts.
Fed up, and I get it. I don't remember who it was. But some D line
jumped offside because that's
Cincinnati
what the Bengals do.
Jumps off sides and it works. And the look on Marvin Lewis's face
is like, God damn.
You gotta be shitting me. Like, there's no.
But here's
way
the thing: like
in
2010, like it was the peak of confidence, and that's what made 2010 so awesome. You were like, we're the world champions. Of course the Saints are winning this fucking game. We're not losing to Cincinnati, and it was so awesome because. I remember when I was a kid, like when the Super Bowl champion came to your town, when the Saints, if it's Dallas or San Francisco or whoever, when the Super Bowl champion came to your town, like if we could beat the team that won the Super Bowl, it can make our year 50% less awful. So everybody wanted to beat the Saints, and the Saints on the road would just rip teams' hard eyes. It was awesome. Like the Dallas Cincinnati game is the peak of 2010. And I know they went home and they played Sam Bradford and the Rams and they
You know what? You know one thing worth mentioning about that game though, which was funny because you just mentioned him, Roman Harper. There's a play in that game where Bradford fumbles the ball at the 1 yard line.
And Roman
picks it up, and you're like, oh, he's going to score.
And
keep in mind,
Malcolm
Jenkins already had a 96-yard interception return in that game, and so you're thinking, here we go again. It's another pick six all or turnover, you know, for a touchdown all the way across the field.
And Roman Harper ran out of gas.
He runs out of gas. Sam Bradford's like 10 yards behind him, and then he chases him out. And it turned out the Saints, I think, were offside, so it didn't matter anyway. Yeah. But after the game, they asked Roman about it. He just smiled, and he's like, no, I did that on purpose. I didn't want to run up the score. I was just being sportsmanlike, and people started cracking up. His teammates gave him so much shit for that.
Yeah. That's a game where, like, the running back started to come back. Reggie Bush was back. He had, nine carries. Pierre Thomas had 12. Kyrus Ivory still led the team in rushing. He had 7 for 47. But, you know, they're 10-3, and you're like, this is great. They go to Baltimore. Baltimore was really good that year. And they lose.
Only team Drew Brees has never beaten, Ralph, in his whole career, the Baltimore Ravens.
They beat they lose to Baltimore 30-24 at home, and just it was a hard fought game. That was the one time Channel 4 has rejected one of my columns. I had to rewrite it because I did a column where I made fun of Ray Lewis. I said how much I hated him because let's be real, Ray Lewis,
because he's a thespian,
because he killed a couple guys, you know. And they're like,
I won't go that far.
You can't do that. You gotta rewrite it.
I get why they might have said to rewrite.
I'm like, I gotta rewrite it. I'm like, come on, you know he did it. And the editors at the time were like, we know, but you gotta rewrite it. So anyway, then they're 10-4, but they go to Atlanta on a Monday night, and this is a thing where like, Jimmy Graham is this rookie who the Saints picked, who he didn't really play football. He played basketball mostly. And this is the thing where, like, people are starting to notice, like, oh, my God, Jimmy Graham?
He's going to be really good.
Really good. He caught the winning touchdown, and the Saints win 17-14, and they do the cigar thing after the game, and you're like, fuck Atlanta, we own your ass. And it was just like the cherry on top of this great season.
They clinch a playoff berth with the win. They're 11-4, which, I mean, how many times in Saints history have they been 11-4? And they were the first team in the NFC South to ever earn consecutive playoff appearances at that point in time.
Yeah.
Beating Atlanta never ever gets old, and doing it in a dramatic fashion. Where you go down the field and you score late that drop, 13 plays, 90 yards. It took seven and a half minutes.
Yeah.
Plus Pierre felt like, all right, he's back. And then turns out, ended up being hurt again. But there was so much to love about that game. National TV. Ralph, it doesn't matter. I mean, yes, they blew a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl. Anything bad that happens to Atlanta, and especially when it's at the hands of the Saints, eternal joy.
For like 2006 to 2011, like the Saints just fucking owned Atlanta. You know, they just did, and they owned Mike Smith. Whatever he did was the wrong call. So then they go to the season finale, and it was still one of those things like if Atlanta loses and we win, we can get home, the Saints can get a bye and all that fun stuff. So, like, Sean
Payton. But I think Atlanta was playing Carolina.
Yeah, so Carolina was
the worst team in the league.
Yeah. So it was like one of those things. So Sean Payton had this hard decision to make. He's like, do I play my guys? Do I not? And you had scoreboard watch. And here's the thing in that game that really sort of fucked the Saints at the time. We didn't realize it is Jimmy Graham got hurt in that game. And that was at the point where Drew Brees had figured out, like, Jimmy Graham can box people out in the end zone, and he's an unstoppable force in the red zone, right? So he gets hurt, and the Saints, they look up at the scoreboard, and they're like, ah, fuck, Jimmy Graham's hurt. It's, it's halftime. It's, it's 13-10 or whatever. Well, fuck it. We're pulling everybody. And Tampa ends up winning 23-13, which they end up going 10-6 and not making it, which was really weird for them. But the thing is, the Saints they lose Jimmy Graham and they go to Seattle, and Seattle is 7-9. They're the first playoff team to ever be 7-9 and have a losing record. Carolina would of course equal it with being 7-8-1 in 2014. But people were like, the Saints are going to house Seattle, and I remember at the time, Scott, I was like, that's not happening. Like Seattle,
nervous.
The game was
nervous.
You, yeah. I was nervous. I was like,
I was so nervous.
I was like, that 10.5 point spread. I'm like, no, not on the road. I'm like, not on the road. And you worried about it. And the thing with that game is it was sort of a theme for the Saints all year, is they jump ahead and they let team back in. And that's the thing, like the Saints came out, they drove down the field, they got up 10-0, Heath Evans. You're like, it's 10-0. It's cool. And I think even I want to say, I'm going to go the play-by-play. I want to say Jabari Greer and have an interception in that game. And Jabari Greer played that whole year where, like, he couldn't lift his right arm above his head because his shoulder was so wrecked, you know?
The Saints were so beat up going into that game, too. Like, you know who the leading rusher was in that game for the Saints?
Julius Jones, right?
Julius freaking Jones was the leading rusher.
He smoked
Reggie
cigarettes.
Bush gets hurt. Heath Evans is playing like running back snaps
in
that game.
Yeah, Julius Jones
and
got
Bush,
hurt too.
Bush dropped a touchdown early in that game too, and they had to settle for a field goal.
Yeah,
and
that's
an awful
the thing.
Game. That was
like,
his last game as a Saint.
Like, you know, they had problems at the goal line because, like you said, Reggie Bush dropped a touchdown. But if they'd had Jimmy Graham, they would have been able to run the little Jimmy Graham to the pylon. It's a touchdown. And they win that game because Drew Brees was quietly fucking phenomenal in this game. Like, you know.
Over 400 yards. He had to throw it, what,
60
times.
No interceptions. You know, it was just, you know, and he was 39 of 60, 404-2. And it was weird because the Saints defense had been good all year, really good and solid all year, and they just could have scored. Sort of collapsed against a bad Seattle team. You know, and we can get into Beastquake. The Saints, you know, here's the thing, what, you know, everybody says about Beastquake. Greg Williams preached first guy in, second guy strip. And
populate the football. That's what he would say.
And here's the thing, it worked like a charm in 2009. So if you want to knock them, so yeah, I mean, Scott, you can't, like, knock Greg Williams because, like, all those turnovers in 2009 were great, and they won the NFC Championship game in part because of it in the Super Bowl, and then they tried to do it again in a playoff game in Seattle, and it blew up in their face, you know? So
it's a terrible visual that's shown forever till the end of time. Like, you're going to see Marshawn Lynch's 67-yard run and all these tackles broken.
I feel like it balances off with Seattle with the Super Bowl interception.
Sure. There you go. Look, I'll take it, you know, for 09. Sure, I'll trade anything for that. But the situation, you're right. They're down by four. Seattle's starting to run out the clock. I mean, I think it's less than 3.5 minutes left. You need to get the ball back. And, I mean, it's worked before. Hell, it worked in Dallas, you know, in the strip. Granted, you know, Malcolm Jacobs was the first one to track down Roy Williams.
Yep.
But, like, It was. Let's try to get the ball loose. And Marshawn Lynch isn't Roy Williams. I mean,
it's not
beast mode. I mean, it didn't work. And the Saints still, if you're thinking, hey, if an onside kick's possible, I mean, they go right down the field and score. It's 41-36. They couldn't get the 2-point conversion, but once onside kick failed, beast mode's play became famous, and the Saints were that team that lost to a 7-9 team, and it was a lousy end of the season. It wasn't.
Yeah.
It was lousy. It wasn't devastating like the next year. The end of the next year was devastating. It was just a lousy way to end, you know, statistically, record-wise, one of the best seasons in franchise history.
Yeah, and I remember, like, when they lost, my wife was like, are you mad? You know, because my wife knows I take the Saints as hard as she takes the Astros, and she goes, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, they won the Super Bowl last year, and they lost a playoff game on a great run. Whatever. I'm like, put in the America's Game DVD. I'm gonna drink. It's fine. You know. I mean, like
Brad Pitt narrating.
Yeah,
narrating
I'm like, I just
story.
Like it was bad, but I like I love 2010. Like I don't like the Beastquake. I'm like, whatever, man. The 2010. Like we just went through it. It was phenomenal.
I think the worst thing about the Marshawn run, it's not that you have to see it all the time. It's that by seeing it all the time, you forget how great that season was for a lot of reasons. You forget about the win at San Francisco, the win at Dallas, the win at Cincinnati, the win at Atlanta. You're right. Road wins that year were some of the most fun road victories in franchise history.
And that's why, like I said before, like when you're the Super Bowl champion and you beat a team on the road and you rip their heart out, it it's incredibly depressing because we know that as a Saints fan, because San Francisco and Dallas and all the NFC teams did it to us repeatedly, and it was just great. I think the NFL should market a wrestling belt, Scott, when a team wins the Super Bowl, and you should be able to buy the belt that says, like, New Orleans Saints World Champion 2009, and you can put it on your mantle, and for the year after, you should be able to, like, if they would have had that, I would have wore the belt while I watched the games.
Look, the NFL is all about making money. How much money they would make off replica belts? The players are doing it. The
Astros give the MVP of the game their belt, and the player gives the interview. He'll have the belt strapped over his shoulder, like Correa won the belt today because he hit two home runs.
How many fantasy football leagues have a belt?
The NFL should do it. If the Saints would have had a world championship belt instead of spending $400 on Super Bowl memorabilia, I'd have spent like $500. I have a Super Bowl Snuggie, a blanket, mugs, tumblers, a gnome. Like, my wife was like, "You are a fucking crazy person."
I think I would buy a belt that just said on it, "The Falcons blew a 25-point
lead."
They
had a guy for Barstool Sports. He had a T-shirt, and it says 28-3, and it has the time left in the third quarter. It was phenomenal. So, I mean, to put a bow on 2010, I say it. Look, 2010 is top five history of the Saints seasons for me. I would rank 2009 number one. 2006, maybe 87, you know, and I would say 2010 is right up there, like fourth, you know,
because 2010, look, the Saints they've had 50 seasons, been in the playoffs only 10 times, and that was one of them. And it's the only one, and will only be the only one, where for the first time in your life as a Saints fan, you know what it feels like to be a champion. You know what it feels like for your team to go into another team's arena, or if you went and travel with them on the road, for people to look at the fans as, "Wait, we're not a joke. Like, we're the Super Bowl champs." And the four road victories, which we really highlighted, it's a shame they've been forgotten because of how the season ended. Because they are some of the most enjoyable moments that I've had as a Saints fan. I mean, the win at San Fran, the win in Atlanta, and the Dallas followed by Cincinnati, the way those two games ended.
Atlanta.
Good. People should look back at 2010 and smile, and 2011 is different, you know. And I know it's not 2011 Saints drunk history, because if we do that one, I will get drunk, because you had to.
I'm so drunk
because you
right
were
now.
Just go, you know, it was sorrow. But 2010, man, that was most teams have that, quote, medicine season. And I think people often look at medicine seasons as, well, it just means you won't win again. No, sometimes a medicine season means, you know, guys get full of themselves, the locker room changes, and it's just not a good year.
No, the Saints were
It was a good year. It was a fun year.
It was, the Saints were an 8-8, 9-7 team that went 11-5 on "we're the fucking champion" grit, or whatever you want to call it. It was so fun because all the baggage, you know, it's kind of returned now because the Saints have had three straight 7-9s and you don't feel as confident at the end of games. I tell you, man, 2010, when Drew Brees had the ball at the end of the game and the Saints were down, I'm like, they're winning the fucking game. They're winning this game. And it was never that. My wife is like, "You are why are you so confident?" I'm like, "Why am I so confident? Look at the fucking gnome that says world champion." You know, I mean, it was great, and I loved it. So Scott, again, tell the people how they can reach you. I mean, a lot of people, granted, they're all over. Surprisingly, we have people all over the world that listen to probably. Tell them they can find you on the internet, and they can get, which is a spot. I'll admit, I don't listen every day, but I listen a lot when I have the time at work. But tell them how they can find your phenomenal show and listen to it online and all that stuff.
Absolutely, man. So at Scott_1420 is excuse me, that's the Twitter handle, and the show is it's on ESPN 1420. It's in Lafayette. I'm from here. I moved back here from New Orleans years back, and just kind of started part time. But I Look, Saints are the number, they're the number one topic on our station most days. I could talk Saints all day, every day. We have a lot of fun with it. I'm on from 4 to 6 every day. There's a listen live link at ESPN1420.com, and then there's a free app called Radio Pup, and you can just download it on your, you know, your Android or your iPhone or your tablet or your whatever it is. And yeah, you can find us on there, 1420, and listen from the comfort of your earplugs wherever you are in the world.
I'm not gonna lie, I listen to Bomani Jones from 4 to 5, and I listen to you almost every day on my drive home through the app on my phone. And listen, it's good sport. It's good sports talk. You want your Saints? Go there, so people. Scott, thanks for joining us on Drunk History. It's been a pleasure. We talked about doing it. We finally did it. 2010. It was. I don't give a fuck what people say. It was magical. And thanks for joining. Thanks.
Well, hey, before we go, look, it was my pleasure, Ralph. I love doing this. And before we go, are you drunk?
I am so drunk. Before the show, since I had confidence in the audio that it would work, because we did a couple episodes before and we had some audio struggles, I was confident that it would work. So I got I did two Abita strawberry beers, and I did two shots of Elijah Craig bourbon, and I drank two bourbons while we were doing this show. I'm completely hammered, because the thing is, in my old age, I cannot mix liquors. I may have to throw up after this podcast. Like, I can drink a lot of one. Like, if I just drink Elijah Craig all day long, I could drink people under the table that say they're drunks and all that, and I drink them under the table. But if you just throw in – if you just mix in, like, one beer or, like, something else, I'm totally off the rails now. Because I can't mix. I got to, like, pick a drink and go with it. And I thought that I was just going to drink beer this whole time. But then I was like, I drank two beers. I'm feeling really good. I'll just mix in a shot. And it's bad. It's going to be like,
You sound like Sean Payton. If he would just stick with what's working when a player gets hot, give the hot hand, give him the rock. But he's like, got to mix it up. He's got to use his toys. And then he gets him in trouble, and we end up throwing up when they blow a game. I mean, very similar.
It's very similar. And I'm going to – tomorrow at work, I'm going to get nothing done. I'm just going to be coffee and hungover. It's going to be terrible. I apologize to my employee. But, Scott, thanks for joining us, Guy. And thanks for everybody for donating. I hope this was worth your time. It was fun.
Thanks to all of our Saints Happy Hour listeners whose donations made Drunk Saints history possible. Until next time, remember, surviving Saints history is hard. That's why God made alcohol.